Good Tuesday afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny. It's May 20th, 2025 from our Half Street Studios just outside of the center field gate in the Navy Yard by Nats Park. You are listening live and we'll take you up to 6:15 pregame of Nats baseball right here on The Fan. Danny, a very rare show today.
Yeah.
We will have two in-studio guests.
Big deal for us.
It does not happen very often. D.C. council member Robert Wood joins us at Robert White, rather.
Joins James us Wood plays o'clock. Later. Robert White joins us.
Robert White on the show to discuss whether or not he's a yes or a no on the Commanders trying to get into the city. We've got four yeses. We need seven yeses. He's been in the maybe pile. We're looking to make him a yes and get to five to try to get a stadium built at the RFK site in D.C. So Councilmember Robert White on this show in 1 hour at 3 o'clock in studio with us. We're excited about that.
That'll be good. All we want is the information. I mean, this is, you know, the public debate. This is a good forum to do. We reach a pretty decent number of people right here. So if you'd like to get your viewpoint out, be able to ask questions and understand where somebody's coming from, you're trying to act in the best interest of the people you represent, the city at large. Let's make a good deal. What's on his mind? I can't wait to hear about it.
We've had a third of the council members on this show already. We had four of them in the first couple of days after the big press conference. We've also had the mayor call in while she was making the rounds in her car and listening to the program. So we've, I think, done some heavy lifting trying to get some intel for our listening audience. This deadline is July 15th. It is less than 2 months away. Is the stadium going to get built? Is the $1.1 billion in public funding going to be provided by D.C. to the ownership group to get this thing across the finish line? So Robert White will give us some answers. We will talk to him coming up in about an hour. And then also, the D.C. Defenders are playoff bound again. They clinched a spot in the XFL Conference Championship with a win this weekend. Their quarterback, who's formerly of the Kansas City Chiefs, was in Washington with the Commanders practice squad, Jordan Ta'amu. He'll be in studio with us. We'll have some fun talking ball with him at 5 o'clock today as well. So should be a very, very good show. It is beautiful.
Yes, it is.
Outside. This
gorgeous.
Is one of those days where if you're in college, you ask your professor if we could go sit outside for the little mini class that we're going to have here for the next hour. I don't think we could take our show outside with Comrexes, but we should think about it.
We should try. Is there a good place that we can kind of set up where there's not a lot of ambient noise? Not really, right?
Does your wife love eating outside when it's hot out?
Yes.
My wife's favorite thing to do when it's super hot out and we're going to a restaurant, she'll say, do you want to eat outside?
No, I don't.
My answer is always that. It's always, of course I don't. I don't want to sweat. I don't want to be uncomfortable. There's about a 7-degree sweet spot where eating outside makes perfect sense. And it's, you know, right around 3 below or 4 below and then 3 above room temperature. Like we're talking 66 to 73, something like that. That, to me, is when you can eat outside. Today is one of those days.
If I can get shade, I'll give you 74. Like, if I'm guaranteed a shade situation where no part of my body is touching sunlight, where it's going to be the sweat point that starts me cascading and perspiring like a miserable person, then I can do 74. Otherwise, if there's sunlight on me, we can't do it. We got to go inside. I've tried to explain my position. I said, you asking to eat outside when it's north of 80 will be like me asking you to eat outside when it's 40. Where the restaurant wouldn't provide it. They wouldn't do it. But that's the analogy to me. Like, if it's 86 and you're like, it's so nice out. Do you want to eat outside? It would be like me going, hey, listen, it's 44 and it's overcast. Do you want to eat outside? That's, to me, is the same.
There are just people that don't mind the heat. This is one of my arguments with beach people, of which you are one.
I am one, yeah.
But the people that don't mind just sitting out there sweaty, smelling like sunscreen, with sand sticking to them, the sun beating down on them, 90-plus degrees. You could be indoors in air conditioning very comfortably in a chair with a cushion on it. But instead, you're in an uncomfortable, generally some type of like crappy chair that you carry over your shoulder to get out to the beach.
Oh, you sling it right over that shoulder.
To sit in the sun, to have the heat all around you constant and in your face every second of every minute.
It's the context that matters. Am I in beach attire? Then let's do beach things. When I'm in regular people clothes, like I'm not going to a restaurant in beach attire. See what I'm saying? Like my wife and I aren't going to like...
You could dress in shorts and a t-shirt. Right now, you're dressed to sit outside.
Yeah, but if it's 86 degrees, it's too hot. If I'm dressed for beach things where I'm just going to jump in that ocean, jump right back out or go in the pool or something like that, it's perfect, but your point stands. To me, it's all about context. If I'm dressed for society, we need to not be hot. If I'm dressed to be hot, let's be hot. You know what I mean? Like if we're going to the amusement park, we're going to the water park, we're going to the beach, we're going outside. Let's do that. It's the asking me to do that when I'm not, when that's not the mode. That's the part I object to.
So it's less complicated for me.
You just don't want to be hot.
Don't be in the sun ever. Yeah, at any time, at any moment.
There it is. There's your summer.
We've beaten it.
We have triumphed,
by the way. Take advantage.
We smacked Mother Nature right in the eye.
Air conditioning exists.
Yeah.
We built places you can go into. Homes, buildings. Used to be that you just had to wander around and hopefully you found a tree you could stand under.
Is that natural cooling thing? Well, it's made from stone and there's a breeze. You hoped.
We've won.
Yeah.
Why act like a loser and be out where you had to be back in the day? Even when I do things outside, which I try not to because it's the worst. But like if I go to a baseball game in the summer, we're sitting in a shady area. And if I'm in the sun, not for the whole time, we're going and getting in the concourse. We're getting refreshments. We're coming back. I'm not a sun guy. It's just not for me.
I mean, it's for human beings. We do need it. But I see your point.
I'm on vitamin D medication. I don't need the sun.
Oh, there you go. I suppose you're right.
I just pop a couple of, you can get those over the counter. You can just go into CVS, buy yourself some vitamin D.
You can just grab some.
Eat it like candy. And I mean, we do need
it.
I mean,
it keeps us temperature and keeps us from having a Hoth ice planet. Yeah. No, I know what you mean.
If the sun wasn't there, we'd all die.
There's no more of us.
But I don't need to be in it.
Yeah.
Sun can stay there.
That I get.
Good job, sun.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be inside.
I get that.
Everybody wins.
Yeah, I get that. You don't have to go outside. We'll go outside for you. Somebody else will.
I just don't understand those people. The NFL stars that want to be in the Olympics are going to get what they want. You see this? It sounds like we are trending toward seeing some of the best players in the National Football League taking part in flag football. A vote, according to ESPN, on whether to allow NFL players to participate in flag football at the 2028 LA Olympics coming up in 3 years is going to pass at today's league meetings in Minneapolis via what Adam Schefter has heard. The resolution needs to be approved by 3/4 of the owners. They need 24 of 32 to sign off on this. The league then needs to negotiate with the Players Association. According to Olympic officials, national governing body, the specifics letting NFL players participate. So here's how this is going to work. There are going to be a bunch of rules that come with the teams allowing players to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think by and large, this is awesome for the NFL.
It's so good.
I didn't think this was actually going to happen because my opinion is that owners aren't going to risk one of their stars, see Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, Patrick Mahomes, whoever.
Doing something slightly different, that non-contact or whatever kind of injury. Yeah,
or
it can be scary.
It doesn't even have to be slightly different. It's just a false step in a game that doesn't matter, and now I'm out for the season. I ruptured this. I tore that. Owners are not in the business when they're not making any money off of the player that they're paying tens of millions of dollars to allowing them to risk injury. These guys that are superstars have built into their contracts that they're not supposed to go play basketball or, play pickup, any kind of football, or, whatever right. The activity is. Oh, you're a big surfer? Not anymore. You can't go out there because you can't risk injury. You like to ride your motorcycle? No, you don't. Not until you retire. Not until I'm done paying you. But the way this is going to work is, according to some of the details from Schefter here, the teams will give the players permission for a player to participate in tryouts to make Team USA or whatever team they're going to end up playing for. There would be a limit of one player per NFL team on every national team participating. So let's just say Jaden Daniels was the quarterback for Team USA. Terry McLaurin wouldn't also be in the Olympics. Only one commander can be on any given country's team. Now, if there's a commander who does the thing, and we see this sometimes in the Olympics, where like, my dad is from this country, and mm-hmm. So I happen to also have citizenship, so I can play for Team Israel or whatever.
Team Canada, Team Barbados, whatever, yeah.
Then the commanders could have 4, 5, 6 guys participating for different countries, but only one player per national team participating, which actually I think is good. Because if I'm the Chiefs, I don't want Mahomes, Kelce, and Isaiah Pacheco making up a third of Team USA.
Right.
Because you want to talk about injury risk, now you're potentially running into a situation where you could lose 2 guys. And they don't want anything to do with that.
No, it makes sense. But I love the idea that they're willing to sacrifice. I put that in quotation marks. They don't have to do anything. But sacrifice to help continue to grow stuff. I mean, they saw it's in a different place and time. But what that dream team in 92 did for basketball, people should be chasing that. Where it made basketball global. There's no Antetokounmpo. There's no Jokic. There's no Nowitzki. There's no Doncic. There's no, just a constant influx of international superstars without that Genesis moment. of the Dream Team going over there and marketing basketball in a way that it hadn't before, right? Kids are going, oh, that's what the best looks like. Not just the overweight guy that couldn't quite make the NBA that's hitting step backs and probably traveling in my Italian league or the Greek league or whatever. This is different now. So football is already so massive here. And it was, yes, basketball is big too. But that's the best way to have a world showcase where you have the pads off, you could see everybody's face, and you could see the stars doing incredible things up close and personal as the world watches. That's the way to grow your international market right there.
It certainly is. I think that, you know, we always talk about the 92 team, which you just brought up, and what they did for basketball internationally, and they changed forever the way we view growing sports globally. No doubt about that. But that was also a very different time when you had to do that. Basically, you had to barnstorm, you know, for lack of a better phrase. Like, you're taking on those other countries. The internet didn't exist. Social media didn't exist. There were not highlights of LeBron in every country constantly that you're scrolling on TikTok and Instagram and Snapchat. And so these sports are now way more global than they ever were. They actually, that's what's interesting. They need international competition less. I still think it's a dramatic plus. I reference, more timely, the Olympics this past summer. Or was that last summer? Whenever, you know, Team USA with LeBron and Steph Curry telling people to go to bed after he hit the big shot with Dwayne Wade on the call courtside dapping everybody up with Noah Eagle on NBC. That was an amazing, amazing thing for basketball. And Bilal Coulibaly took part, if you remember, and it was as good a showcase globally as I can remember in recent years for any sport, because not only did all the best American players take part, and basketball's corner of the markets on this, I think, but they all cared so damn much.
Yep.
Like, they really wanted to win gold. Hopefully the NFL can create that, or the Olympics for football can manufacture that. I think it's going to be hard to do. I think because of what you're talking about, 92, the Dream Team, and really, you know, all of the tourneys internationally since, that's not a forced thing. That's not manufactured. That's just real and authentic and normal and legitimate. That Team USA, if you're on that team, you really, really care. I don't think you can fake that. So I hope that the players from the NFL teams that are taking part are as thirsty for a gold medal, because that's what makes that work to me. But I don't think you necessarily even need that anymore, because you don't think the NFL's monstrous in these other countries.
They're doing just fine, yeah.
You know, now everything's digital. You can stream everything online. You can any link you want to a game's available in whatever country you're in, as long as you got the computer and the internet. But it's still going to be really good for football.
No, for sure. And it's, you know, this is one of those, it's bigger than the regular season. And what other opportunity would you have for these world-class, elite 1/1,000,000th of 1% athletes to win a gold medal? I mean, you know, you get the stories like Herschel Walker leaving football and then being really good at the bobsled, like pushing the bobsled at the beginning. Or, you know, the occasional,
did he compete in the Olympics?
He did, yeah. In the Winter Olympics.
Herschel Walker was a bobsled pusher?
Yeah, or maybe the slalom, I can't remember which the thing was. But
that's
they
wacky.
Discovered this guy that's super big, super strong, super fast, is really good at starting and stopping and pushing the sled at the beginning.
Well, bad comp, but do you realize that almost all of the guys that work on pit crews in NASCAR are former college football players now? And a lot of them played in the NFL, practice squads and stuff. The guys that are jumping over the wall with the tires and carrying the big fuel.
See,
things.
I didn't know that, but yeah, it makes sense.
I mean, they now like highlight these guys in some of the telecasts, and you would be stunned. I mean, some of them are names you'd even remember from a couple of years
in
the NFL.
Like, he was a wideout at Pitt.
Exactly.
He was a running back at
same
UAB.
Same kind of deal that you're saying with Herschel Walker, where weird that the guy that runs the crazy 40 time is one of the best athletes ever would be really good at another thing.
Yeah, the super in shape guy that's unbelievably fast and strong would be good at something else. I mean, there are occasional examples of someone that's been able to cross over, but for the most part, football's been left out. It's an American sport. It's ours. We love it so much. But internationally, it's like, in order to have a talent pool, you there's just no way to compete at that same level. Whereas there were basketball leagues, there were basketball teams, there's tennis, there's the sports that the world plays. The world doesn't play football yet. And this is the way eventually maybe to get there to that point where you could have A, the international talent pool, but B, have that kind of showcase to kind of inspire some of the folks around. So it's bigger than that, but it's also a chance for, like, you know, the Jamar Chases of the world who we're talking about. You were never getting a gold medal otherwise. Now you can. Like, that's really cool. Like, what a bucket list thing to be able to check off.
Stand on a podium, national anthem playing.
Pretty badass.
Put that gold medal, you know, bite on it like they do. A purchase of league-wide insurance policies is going to be available to the teams to provide injury protection for any player injured while participating in the authorized flag football activity that gets related to the Olympics. They'll get a salary cap credit as well for any player that's injured. I found that interesting. So the teams basically are saying, look, if I allow Ja'Marr Chase to go over there and he gets hurt, he can't count against my salary cap.
Right.
Because there is no policy in the NFL like there is in hockey. Remember, we just got through a season where TJ Oshie and Nicholas Backstrom were hurt, and they haven't retired, but they're on something called LTIR, long-term injured reserve, where their money does not penny for penny count against the salary cap. You get massive relief when you put those guys on LTIR. The NFL does not have that. Those injured reserve players' salaries are still working against your cap. But as part of allowing players to do this, as part of this collective bargaining that they're doing, you're going to get cap relief if one of your guys gets hurt. I think that's really smart and really good to do. The expectation that Olympic flag football teams will establish medical staffs, field surfaces are going to have to comply with NFL minimum standards. I think that's a no-brainer and obvious. A schedule that does not unreasonably conflict with NFL players' league and club commitments during the offseason. You know, these are basic things, but the NFL is making sure we're going to do this. They know it's good for them. But we're going to help you with your thing, too. You're going to benefit more than we're going to benefit. We can both be happy, and we both stand to do better because of this. But here's our demands. And it sounds like they're all being met. So it sounds like everyone's going to win, including Team USA, by the way. I have to imagine we would just run shop. I mean, is there any way that in a Olympic flag football tournament where I'll just pick Patrick Mahomes as that quarterback, throwing to Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson and Cooper Kupp or Puka Nacua or whoever, you know, in a 5-on-5, I don't know what that looks like, 7-on-7, however you do it, that we wouldn't beat Germany or Japan or Canada? I mean, can you imagine?
Unless there's
all-time upset stuff.
Seriously. I mean, unless there's some, you know, because the flag football guys, I don't know if you remember this like weird internet conflict for like an hour and a half.
Yes.
A few weeks
this
ago.
This dude said he was better than Mahomes.
And you're like, no.
The random quarterback.
And you're like, respectfully, you're not. Like in any way at all. But maybe there's something to the flag football is so different that the guys that play it professionally, I put that in quotes, whatever that is, it might be a different animal. I don't know. Maybe. Unless there's somebody's already like doing it a certain way. But to me, give me Mahomes dropping back and Jefferson just pointing up at the sky and just throwing up to him. And then we have a touchdown, and then we could go for two and do it again. And maybe Nacua gets a turn and can't stop Ja'Marr Chase on the quick stuff. Or, yeah, no, give me seven defensive backs, all world, just pulling flags quick and proper.
I would think Team USA is favored by dozens of points
should
in every game.
Right?
They have to be. Because the game is different, you know, flag versus pro, tackle versus not, whatever. But I also don't know, roster-wise, like how many you're allowed to have. I would imagine most teams, like just watching the youth level that occasionally is on ESPN2 or ESPN11 or whatever I've bumped into on a Saturday while sitting at a sports bar or something. A lot of times the kids go both ways, right? Like you're the receiver and then you're the DB. So I don't think you would have corners. Or maybe you'd have an ultra-athletic like a...
Like Travis Hunter would be on my team probably.
Exactly. Yeah, I would think he'd make Team USA. But like maybe Jalen Ramsey actually is just a receiver running routes and then is also a corner.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be curious how you put the team together. You're not going to have a linebacker, wouldn't think. I mean, unless you're able to have specific defensive players. But does that help? He's not tackling. I think you just want the fastest, shiftiest guys. And that's probably going to be skill offensive players or DBs, you know, corners, something like that.
I mean, again, it's a slightly different skill set. So, like, Jahmyr Gibbs should play, for example. Like, he'd be good at everything.
Hell yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the burst, the ability to kind of wiggle through because he's not that big.
Would Jahmyr Gibbs be good at pulling the flag? That's what I don't know.
You would think, because he's coordinated and fast and quick. But I don't know.
Hopping and sprinting and starting and stopping.
Just beating a guy to a spot, making his feet stop, and then grabbing that flag, right? Like, that's kind of the key to it. But still, the point is, I'm like drooling at the possibilities of these unbelievable, ridiculous athletes, no pads on, and you actually get to see it. Because sometimes football looks, it's like, oh, that's fast and strong. You don't really get the appreciation for it. Now that you give them some space to operate, good heavens, it's going to be ridiculous.
But you when you say that, but you haven't watched the Pro Bowl where they're doing the exact same thing. And, you know, they're playing flag football now in the Pro Bowl, and it's all the guys we're talking about. And you haven't watched 1 minute of it, and you make fun of not watching it.
That's true.
Now, it's the Olympics, and it's for a gold medal, and Team USA's on the shirt, so I'm not saying it's not important. But if your point is just to see these guys play flag football is amazing, well, nobody's watching the Pro Bowl.
So you're right about that. I would say my counter is where there's stakes. In other words, it's not the like, I missed you, and we're like laughing and smoking and joking about it. This is our nation versus your nation. Like, so I think there'd be some incentive, but I think your point stands. And I also love the idea of the disparity. In other words, like if Patrick Surtain's going up against Justin Jefferson, that's a good matchup. I'd like to see Justin Jefferson against like Klaus von Hammerschmidt of the German Professional Flag Football League, where I run a 4.5. I'm very excited about my athleticism. Wrong. This one. Look at this special person.
D.C. council member Robert White joins us in about 40 minutes. We'll talk to him. He's undecided publicly so far on what's going to happen over at the RFK site. We're going to get to the bottom of how he would vote. July 15th is the deadline to try to get a deal done, as of right now, in D.C. for the $1.1 billion publicly funded to help get this stadium going and built. So we'll talk to him about that coming up at 3 o'clock. Next, though, the huge issue at the owners' meetings is not flag football in the Olympics. It's the tush push. And item B is seeding in the NFL playoffs and whether or not winning a division should automatically get you a home game in the postseason. We'll get into that next. You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan. D.C. council member Robert White joins us at 3, and at 4 o'clock today, we're giving away tickets to see The Offspring, Supercharged Worldwide in 25 this July at Jiffy Lube Live with Jimmy Eat World, Newfound Glory. Going to be a great show. So if you want those tickets, you better be listening in 90 minutes on Grant and Danny. Our G&D poll of the day, presented by Metropolitan Moving and Storage, local, long-distance, residential, or commercial. 3 decades of best-in-class service and experience is actually available right now on the 106.7 The Fan Twitter account. We're asking you about one of the issues at hand today with the owners' meeting in in West Palm Beach, ahead of votes being doled out the next 2 days on these big NFL issues. So, Danny, should the NFL redo how it seeds its postseason? That is one of the votes being conducted. Playoff reseeding proposal was put forth by the Detroit Lions. It seeks to seed teams based on record at the start of the playoffs. That's not currently how the league operates. In current playoff seeding system has been set up for years so that division winners receive the top 4 seeds. There's 4 divisions. If you win a division, no matter what your record is, you're seeded 1 through 4 among the other division winners, and you automatically, in addition to being a top 4 team in your conference, get to host an opening round playoff game, or you get a bye. The wild card teams, which are seeds 5 through 7, even if they have a better record, have to travel to your building. Leads to scenarios where a 9-8 team that wins a division, or in Washington's case with Ron Rivera back in 2020, a 7-9 team, now it could be a 7-10 division winning team, would host an 11-6 wild card team, and it happens semi-routinely. As a result, the 11-6 team, despite winning more games in the regular season, goes on the road, plays in your building, has a worse chance of moving forward. So it does what a lot of people like you like, which is prioritize the regular season. It also is something coaches love because they can really harp on the importance of division games and winning your division and that being a major goal so you can host a playoff game. But the Lions and a lot of other teams have long said, this doesn't make any sense. If you have 12 wins and another team has 8 wins, you shouldn't be traveling to their stadium. We should rank 1 through 7 based solely on record. The gift of winning your division is making the playoffs. You still get an automatic bid. If your record at 7-10 is 9th best in the conference, you're not going to miss the playoffs. You still get in. You're just going to be the 7th seed. I actually love this proposal.
I love it.
And I can explain why, but I want to give you the first ups.
Yeah, I mean, last year, Washington went on the road for their postseason game, despite being 12-5, being 2 full games better than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who were 10-7. You mentioned the time Washington benefited from this, being by far and away the worst team. Ironically, it was Tampa Bay that came to their building. It was the Heineke game. We all know the story. So if this was such a dramatically different thing where you didn't have so many common opponents. And what I mean is, if this was, say, college football, where there were 100 teams then I might go, okay, well, maybe you give some deference to the conference, knowing that the conferences are all pretty similar and pretty elite. The fact is, there's so much crossover. There's so much commonality. We've got a pretty good data set, right, for these different divisions that are playing each other. The competition's all relatively close together. You're playing pretty good football teams each and every week. There's very few little sisters of the poor, directional A&Is and small fries. Everybody's got a pretty good strength of schedule. There's a bunch of NFL teams on it. So your record being better should count substantially. The idea that a 12-5 team could go on the road to a 7-10 team in the first round of the postseason is absurd, just by virtue of luck. Nothing that the division winner did well. It was, you happen to be in a terrible division. Congratulations. I would end that. I'd keep them in the playoffs, though. Winning the division should count for something. I've always believed that, just coming from the NFC East. A playoff admission is plenty reward.
Exactly. It does. I mean, the two arguments against this, someone could say, would be, to your point, number one, well, winning the division has to matter. It matters, man.
Yep.
You make the playoffs automatically. The second you win your division, you make the playoffs. Now, you don't get the home game that you've always gotten, and so it matters less. Nothing I can say about that. But you're still getting the gift of the postseason regardless. That's number one. And number two, the other thing you could say is, and I hear this argument all over the place today, the regular season matters less. If you are going to have the seeding be done based on record, regular season division champion sliding around the standings, I actually think it's the opposite.
Well, that's why it's going to pass, is because it's the opposite.
What is actually happening is you're saying the Minnesota Vikings last year, who went 14-3, are not going to travel to LA to take on the Rams, who were 10-7. Make the case for me that the regular season matters more when the 10-7 Rams are hosting the Vikings than when the 14-3 Minnesota Vikings, who just spent months only losing three games, kicking everybody's butt except their division games against Detroit, narrowly missed out on winning the best division in the conference, now have to travel. I think it's a flawed argument. And people just say it with conviction. Ah, you're watering down the regular season. It's going to mean less. No, maybe division play means less. And if that's your argument, I understand that. People are infatuated with division structure. By the way, we've tweaked the divisions before. We've gone from 5 in divisions to 4. We used to be that the Arizona Cardinals were in the NFC East. No one thinks about that anymore. Now they're the NFC West. Like, people will get used to any kind of a shift in overall significance of the division. Again, maybe it means a little less. It's still important. You still get into the playoffs. But this idea to me is, the regular season should matter. I agree with you. The regular season's really important. I agree with you. And that's why Minnesota potentially at 15-2 losing a tiebreaker and not winning its division, they ended up 14-3, having to travel potentially to a 8 or 9 win team is an outrage. That is taking away from the import of the regular season.
Yeah. Why am I rewarding an okay Houston team because the rest of their division was terrible? And punishing a Chargers team who's got to deal with the buzzsaw that is Kansas City. They won 11-6, talking about the Chargers. The reason this is going to pass is because now with 7 playoff teams in each conference, they need those end-of-season, regular-season games to matter more. They stopped mattering as much. They didn't realize what was going to happen, but there's more locked up. There's more tiebreakers are done as of week 16. So, you know, it could have happened. Now it didn't this way. But if Detroit, who was, say, 13-2 at the time, had already beaten Minnesota twice, and Minnesota was a game and a half behind them, there's no catching them, so Detroit's on cruise control for a couple of weeks. We want our end of the season to be still everything up for grabs, everything on the line. That's why this is going to pass this time. So any argument about the regular season not mattering anymore is, quite frankly, wrong. Now, the argument that does stand is you're diminishing the import of divisional games. You're watering that down slightly, and winning your division is slightly less important. That I cannot argue with because it's true. But there's still a huge, outsized, important role to win your division. No matter how good or bad it is, you are granted automatic entry. And there's a great chance if you're a great team, aka Detroit last year winning that buzzsaw of a division where 3 teams won at least 11 games, you'll probably end up getting rewarded with a bunch of home games in the postseason.
So there's a little bit of a trade-off to this too, right? In the same way that I am admitting defeat on the argument of, well, the division and games get less important. Okay, you're right. Tip my cap to you. Mm-hmm. The example I'll give you, you just referenced the end of the year. So Minnesota, who we've talked about, played Detroit It was a nationally televised. It might have been the Sunday Night Football to end the season. I remember being in a hotel. I don't know where I would have been, but I was watching that game somewhere in a hotel traveling, and it was the final game of the year where the winner won the division and the loser was going to be wild card, and Sam Darnold turned into a pumpkin.
Yes, remember that game? I do, yeah.
And the Vikings just got blown out, got the doors blown off by Detroit, I believe, in Detroit in that game. Well, that game wouldn't really matter, in all honesty, if you change it to this policy. I mean, seeding would change a little bit, right? Because one of them would be, say, the two versus the three or the one against the two. And maybe there's still a bye on the line in a rare case like that one where they were the two best teams in the conference. But in other words, the Washington-Dallas, like week 17 game, if you're both in the playoffs and 11 wins versus 12 wins, you are taking away the division championship, the home playoff date, like the significance of that game if you're both actually just going to be going on the road as the 5 and the 6 seed in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So I acknowledge that. But you're also adding so much to conference games outside of the division. This year with Washington playing the NFC North as an example. Now, they play Green Bay in week 2, but if that was a week 16 game, you're talking about those two teams vying for something they wouldn't have been before. And just by way of the math, 3 division opponents, way more conference opponents that are in the postseason mix, there's more of those situations. So if I'm acknowledging to you, yes, the division game gets less important, you have to acknowledge to me then the non-division conference game gets more important, and there's more of those. So I think the net is still a positive in terms of what is being gained and lost as a consumer. And speaking of the Packers, they won 11 games last season. Here's a good example of something, too. They would have been the number 5 seed in the NFC instead of the number 7 seed. So as an 11-win team, they had to go play Philadelphia, the 2 seed. And they narrowly lost that football game. Remember, there was like a turnover on the first play.
Yeah.
And Tush Push set Central. And Tush Push O'Clock turned into Matt LaFleur and all them wanting to get rid of the Tush Push. They're the team that brought this up that may get it off the table here. But you're saying, well, why does that matter? Well, if you win 11 or 12 games and you're the 5 seed, not the 7 seed, you get to avoid the 2 seed. The better team that had the better regular season should get to avoid the better team in the first round of the playoffs. The worst team that barely snuck in, that isn't very good, you know, should have to play the better team. And to the Eagles' point, the number 2 seed, again, we want to make the regular season matter more, right? Should the Eagles have to play a good Packers team or the 7 seed that just snuck in that was 7-10?
So
it might have won a division, but sucks.
Yeah, and to your point, the Eagles were all but locked into that 2 seed for the last month of the season. I mean, there was possible variance, you know, if Minnesota had just fallen apart or something else, but they were going to be the 2 seed pretty much no matter what. I want to avoid that. I want that last game to matter because if they win, and again, just replaying last year, if they win and Minnesota had won, then what's the tiebreaker? Or Philadelphia was on cruise control down the stretch. As soon as they beat Washington, or I can't remember actually which win it was. But anyway, down the stretch, they had the division all but wrapped up. There's nothing else really for them to play for or do. And the NFL's basically going, with our new format, we want to avoid those things. We want to avoid their pretty much, you know, Tampa's locked into the 4 and the Rams are locked into the 3. We don't want people locked in. We want every game down the stretch to matter more.
What's the better postseason system? The current structure where you win a division, you get a home game, you're seeded 1 through 4 as division winners, and then there are 3 wild cards that have to be sorted out by record 5 through 7, or the way that the NFL is voting on possibly changing to, which would be the 7 best teams make the playoffs, and you're seeded 1 through 7 based on record and tiebreakers, nothing to do with whether or not you won a division. Take your calls on this next. 800-636-1067 is the number. You can tweet us at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny. We'll get to those responses as well on The Fan. Our Metropolitan Moving and Storage poll of the day. League owners set to vote on a potential reseeding of the NFL playoffs. Should the league change the way seeding works in the playoffs? Yes, reward the best records. No, keep it as it is. That's a poll, Darius. That is a cleaned up version of whatever nonsense I was trying to suggest.
It's like if a team wins, but it is in the central time zone and they have the same number of wins as a Canadian team, should we? And Darius cleaned it right up.
This is one of those that's kind of like overtime where there's always more people than I expect that want to do it the bad way. And I just don't understand it. 55% of the early votes are saying keep it as it is.
Amazing to me.
It's like overtime, man. Yeah. You and I are like, we shouldn't have ties. We should do everything we can to avoid ties.
And then 80% of respondents are like, you know, there should be more ties.
Ties are good. I think they should do a hockey shootout. They should bring out ice and do a hockey shootout with football players on skates before they should have a tie. It makes more sense to have Terry McLaurin and Jaden Daniels put ice skates on and do a shootout against Jalen Hurts, who's in net, trying to defend them in a Flyers jersey, than it does to have a tie. I hate ties so much. But people are like, no, let's keep doing it the overtime way in the NFL. But college overtime's so much better, let's do it that way. No, the NFL's got it.
I think whoever wins the coin toss should get to win the game. If you don't like it, stop them, said the person who votes for this way on the poll.
All right, let's see what the people think. Jeff's in Ashburn. Are you leaving it the terrible way that it is, or are you doing it a better way?
No, I'm leaving it the way it is. I mean, if you're good enough to win and win your division, you should be rewarded for that.
But aren't you being rewarded with an automatic postseason bid?
Even if you're crappy?
Hey, you won your division.
Yeah, so you get to go to the postseason.
If
the better team with a better record doesn't win their division, why should they get rewarded?
Because they're better.
Your division.
But they're better than you.
Well, you won't know that until you play them on the road.
Right, but if they go 11-6 in a good division and you went 7-10 in a bad division, they're better than you.
Win your division.
See?
Yes.
This is what happens.
It's when
it's
a just
great
when
phone call. I mean, we don't agree with it, but it's exactly what he's representing. A lot of people. That's why the league has gotten away with this tomfoolery for so long, because there's so many people that want to leave it the terrible way that it is. Let's go to Otis, who is in Mitchellville. Otis, do you want to keep it the bad way or do a good way?
Oh, I want to keep it. I want to keep it because, like Minnesota, they played 8 games against a weaker division in the NFC West and also in the AFC South. And that was 8 free games that they got, and that's why their record was so good. So they weren't really a strong 14-win team. That's why they lost first round against the L.A. Rams, who they lost to earlier that season.
It's a good argument.
Okay, what does that mean? Was Tampa then a strong 10-win team? Or did they get a benefit of playing the Panthers a couple times?
He does make a really good argument, though, before I tag him back in, Danny, which is the divisions play different divisions. Now, and every year is different, but his point is you could go 14-3 beating up on terrible divisions if you get to play the worst divisions in the league.
So did they play AFC West or AFC South? Because someone won the AFC South that was probably pretty bad. You see what I'm saying? Like, it all equalizes.
But the Commanders or none of the other teams faced the AFC South either, and that was 4 wins outside of the Texans,
right?
And then the NFC West was trash because San Francisco was down. Nobody knew about the Cardinals. Seattle was confused. So
well, it certainly wasn't trash. You're starting to struggle a little bit making the point when you start talking about the NFC West being bad, but I certainly get where you're coming from, which is, I think, a good argument that if you just base it on the record to say that a team's better than another team, it's no different than saying, well, that division's bad and that division's good, because you're saying they're playing different opponents.
But it willfully turns on blinders to the fact that Minnesota won 14 games in the best division in football. With 3 teams that won at least 11 games, including them.
I'm not saying his specific example is gospel. I'm just saying the idea that a team could have a better record that plays, just making it up. But last year, the AFC South, and let's say the... I'll just make up that the NFC West was bad or whatever. If they played those two divisions, and they were both the 2 worst divisions in football, and they went 12-5, and then someone in the NFC East went 10-7, but played the best divisions in the league, then you could make the case that they benefited from a softer schedule. Now, in this case, he's claiming that the Vikings, who had to play the Packers twice, who had to play the Lions twice, even the Bears, who were not particularly good, are not a fun team to have to play good defensively, playmakers on offense. They had a way worse situation because that's the best division in the sport.
Right. And so my point is, those things, if you go, well, they got to play this 4 games in this one division, Well, again, these tend to come out in the wash. And there may be the year where it's so spectacularly unfair and that one time a team got one extra win because their schedule was softer. I mean, are we starting to do that now if a quarterback was hurt or they're missing a certain player? They go, it was easier. Just stack up the wins, man. It's so simple.
Seven teams make the playoffs. They are considering ranking 1 through 7 based just on record. If any news breaks on how the vote comes down today, we will let you know as it develops. We're covering that for you on The Fan. Councilmember Robert White, who is one of the council members in Washington, D.C., will be voting on the upcoming stadium legislation. He's going to join us next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.